Blog Talk Radio.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright, sunshiny day. Gonna be bright, sunshiny day. I think I can make it now, the pain is gone. All of the bad feelings have disappeared. Here is that rainbow I've been praying for. It's gonna be bright.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments while this broadcast is going on, feel free to email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. Well, this certainly is a surprise for a lot of people who are wondering why this show is on Wednesday night instead of our usual Sunday. But there were some technical difficulties on Sunday, and so because my guest is so important, who I'll be introducing in a moment, I said, we can't let this time waste. Another week, we're going to bring Kristen on a Wednesday. And that's why, and of course, you can listen to this broadcast anytime of any day, now or in the future, as many of you do. But before I introduce my special guest, Kristen, I just want to make an announcement that we now have settled for our healing weekend, which will be April 28th and 29th. And it will be outside Washington, D.C., so it's very convenient to transportation from anywhere around the country and around the world. So if you want more information, please send me a note at bonkay@aol.com. And in the headline, just put in Healing Weekend. And if you don't have my email address, go to my website, gayhusbands.com, and there's a link there for information. Just click into it. And I also want to mention that on my site, while you're on gayhusbands.com, make sure to check out my link to Just Answer. Just Answer is a wonderful service for women, especially those who are going to start the divorce proceedings or going through divorce, who cannot afford thousands of dollars initially for an attorney. This is a service where for $36 a month, you can talk to attorneys that are licensed in your area, and they will give you all the answers that you need And then when you have to get a lawyer to go to court, at least you'll know what you're talking about. So just answer. You can ask a free question on my website at gayhusbands.com about any subject concerning the law or any medical issue. I'm a member of justanswer.com, and when there's medical issues in my family, I talk to licensed doctors, and I get wonderful information. So you try it, too, at gayhusbands.com. Just answer. So without any further ado, I would like to introduce my very special guest. And I say she's my special guest because there are very few women that I've met over the last 35 years of working with women who have gay husbands who I can look up to as someone who I so greatly admire and who has become my literary guru, as I like to call her, with not only the beautiful words that she writes, but also the beautiful way that she speaks. So I've had the pleasure of actually meeting in person this wonderful woman and reading her beautiful words, and she's been kind enough to allow me to share them with you in her my newsletters. So without further ado, I will introduce you, Kristen Cowbley. Thank you, Kristen, for being on the show.
Thank you, Bonnie. It's a pleasure to be back with you. It's
you know,
great
Kristen,
to be
it just
here.
Always amazes me how beautiful you can sling words together, because I don't know anyone else who can do it the way that you do. So maybe you can tell people a little bit about your background and how you are able to do this.
Well, thank you so much for that incredibly generous description. I love writing, and my background, just real briefly, is in the arts. I was an English and theater major, and for about 17 years, I was an Atlanta-based actor and director and audiobook narrator and voiceover artist. And I recently moved to Naples, Florida for a little change of pace and some sunnier weather. And I love writing, and it's because people like you call me and ask me to write about stuff that I get to do that. So I appreciate that you give me an opportunity to write, and anyone who reads my work, I appreciate that as well. So as I build an audience for my work, and I'm working on my first book right now, which is about my own memoir of my own marriage and divorce to a closeted gay man. And I'm working away as fast as I can on that. It is my first book, and I will say I have to give a shout out to anyone who's ever written a book. That includes you, Bonnie. It's quite the undertaking, but I keep going because I believe it's really an important story to tell, not just for me to tell it, but for other people to hear it.
Exactly. And this, how is your book coming along, Kristen? You expect it out maybe within the next year?
I hope so. I would like to, I'd love to be wrapped up in about the next 8 months with the writing. I'm not sure if I will, but I'm hoping that that's what, had some unexpected interruptions this year that slowed things down a little bit, but that's all right. And I keep plowing through. So hopefully within a year.
So Kristen, when did you really enter the arena with straight wives? Because you know, I just finally read about your work last year. Were you doing it before that, or was that something that you had just started?
Well, I had just started right about the time that you found my first, the first piece of writing that you found was actually the first piece of writing that I did about being a straight wife. And that was really only about a year or so, or a little more ago. And that's because I only learned for sure that my ex-husband was gay 2 years ago. And that was because his second ex-wife, who was then divorcing him at the time, contacted me. And she was, as you can imagine, in just a very desperate place. He had come out to her in a very sudden and abrupt way, and she was left utterly gobsmacked. I mean, it just came out of left field for her. And so she contacted me, hoping that I could shed some light on the situation. And of course I shared with her that I had my suspicions over the years, and actually that the night that I separated from my husband, I had asked him if he was gay and he denied it. But I never had confirmation for sure that he was gay. So even until she called me or contacted me 2 years ago to tell me that he was in fact gay and that they were getting a divorce. And when she said that, it was like everything made sense. And it was because I had been trying to heal myself from a very psychologically destructive relationship, because when someone is holding a secret that deep, and carrying it with so much shame and self-loathing, that the marriage itself becomes just a toxic ether of confusion and doubt, and you're really left alone in it, trying to figure out what's wrong. And when you ask what's wrong, you're met with stonewalling and silent treatment and punishment and things like that. So I really spent about 8 years post-divorce just kind of finding my way in the dark, trying to heal myself in any way that I could, and had just gotten, ironically, to the point in my life 2 years ago where I was like, okay, you know, I've been through therapy, and I've, you know, studied with Buddhist lamas, and I've done it. I've read every book, and I just need to live my life now. Like, I've healed myself as much as I can. And it was literally just a few, maybe months after I kind of said, all right, I'm done with whatever that was. I'm putting it behind me. I'm moving on, that she contacted me. And that kind of threw me back into the whole world of, well, it threw me actually for the first time into the world of being a straight spouse, because that was when I knew officially that I was a straight spouse. I didn't know that I was that before. And so 2 years ago, then I went through this whole process of reprocessing the entire marriage through the lens of now knowing for sure that he was gay. And so that brought up old griefs in a new and fresh way, and brought up old anger in a new and fresh way to be processed much more quickly this time, because I'd already done a lot of work. So it was both freeing and liberating in a way to have that truth. I mean, I know what it is like to live for almost a decade without having that answer and that confirmation and that validation of our instincts and our truth. And it just makes it so hard to heal without the truth. But I know what a relief it is to have the concrete, real truth that you can kind of hang your hat on and reestablish a sense of your own reality and validate your intuition, validate the instincts that you had, validate the feeling that something is off and I don't know what to do with it. And many of us never get that validation. So I've lived with it and I've lived without it, and I know how hard it is to move on in our lives without that validation. But that's my background in being a straight spouse. So relatively speaking, even though my 10-year divorce anniversary is coming up this December, I've only known I was a straight wife, a straight spouse for 2 years. So that's my background.
You know, one of the things that you just brought up that I would like for you, if you could share a little bit about this, like you said, once you had the confirmation from his next wife, which once again, to women, they have to understand that these men do multiple marriages, then it's just not your husband, but many of them. You can't let that throw you off because a man remarries again, that to question maybe he's not gay. But in retrospect now, because you did get the confirmation, is there any advice you can give to women who are suspicious but keep doubting themselves like you did?
I want to reaffirm to women, anyone experience, any person experiencing a situation where you feel like something is off. Because as I've learned in normal relationships, people in normal, healthy relationships aren't walking around all the time feeling like something is off. And that's thing number one. So whatever it may be, that intuition is so paramount. And I can point to numerous times where I got that little prickly feeling on the back of my neck. And because I self-doubted and because I didn't have the self-esteem and because I didn't have the tools to pay attention to those signals and I didn't have the tools to honor my intuition when it came up or to even really know what that was. I mean, I just thought, quite frankly, I thought it was a little devil inside of me trying to screw things up. And actually, my intuition was guiding me all along. And I just thought that that was some bad person, part of my personality, some dark force within me that was trying to muck things up and mess with my life and steer me down a path of waywardness. So, and I want to kind of shout from the rooftops that those kinds of feelings are our guidance systems. They are our inner guidance systems. and they're a blessing. And when we can start to really honor them and listen to them and hone them and stop when we get that feeling and pay attention and say, what is that? What is that? I don't know. It's important to acknowledge, I don't know what's wrong, but I know something is off. Like, we don't have to know what it is, but if we can just say, something ain't right here, and honor ourselves for having the perceptive abilities to say, I don't know what it is, but something's not right. And be able to stick to that. You know, I mean, a lot of times we're in very manipulative relationships where the minute we say that, hey, something's not right here, it gets flipped around on us, and it gets, well, you must be crazy. You must be imagining things. We get blamed. Speaking about the subject of what we're going to talk about more tonight, about blame, we often get blamed for even acknowledging that something is off. And we have to, and that's where it takes a lot of practice, and it's a little bit at a time, but listening to that intuition and being willing and able and fighting for that little voice inside of us that says, no, something is off. I'm not crazy. This does not feel right. Something is off. And so I just want to say to the women out there who have those feelings of intuition and those sort of sensations that things are not right, follow that. And even if you never get the full answer, something is speaking to you, and honor it. Doesn't, in some senses, like I don't want to dismiss how liberating it was to have the truth, but I also want to say it is enough to know that you know something's not right. Even if you don't know what specifically it is enough to know that it's not right for you, that it's not okay for you. And you may not know what's making it not okay. You may not know that he's gay. He may be deeply closeted. He may not know that he's gay. He may know that he's gay, but be nowhere near coming out of the closet. He may be deceiving himself. He may be not deceiving himself, but just deceiving you. Either way, it is enough to know that it's not okay for you, whatever is happening. So I want to start there and just give that piece of validation to straight wives and women and people experiencing these kinds of relationships that you're not crazy.
Let me ask you this question, Kristen, because I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I will. You mentioned how validating it felt once you got this information. I tell women that if you know that your husband, your gay husband, is now with some other woman, that you should do her the favor and tell her. And I know that some people feel this is controversial, and I've heard people say, well, let her find out the same way I had to find out, or it's not my business to tell, or why should she have the advantage that I didn't have? And or most importantly, they're going to say, but she won't listen to me. She won't believe me. My husband will tell her that I'm crazy. He's already told her that, I'm sure, 100 times. But I say that even if she doesn't believe you now, when things start crumbling apart, and they guarantee they will, at least she'll know in her head why it's happening. So do you agree with that or not?
Somebody who's already had this happen to you. Yeah, I do agree with that. And but let me say from my own life experience, I was the first wife. And so even though I had, and I did learn that he remarried, and I have to say that upon first learning about her, I never personally felt jealousy towards her. I never felt anger towards her. My immediate response was, oh my God, he's going to punish her for everything that he thinks I did to him. Like I just instinctively knew that he was going to have a tighter thumb on her than he had on me, because I got away. And I felt, my feeling toward her was, pity is not quite the right word, because that sort of implies a superiority, but I was just like, oh my God, he's gonna punish her. And I felt sorry for whoever she was. And, I was still questioning in my own self whether or not he was gay. I was still that trusting person that said, well, he told me he wasn't gay. I believe, So I didn't have, I was not the first wife with proof. If I had been the first wife with proof, I don't know what I would have done in that circumstance because I didn't live that. I was the first wife with questions and suspicions. And in fact, when I heard he was remarrying a woman, I went, okay, I guess he really isn't gay.
Exactly.
So that was, I was not in a position to give her information as the person.
You received the news,
but
I'm saying.
Yeah,
once you received it, it validated it for you, right?
Yeah, she received it, I received that confirmation from her as the second wife, and I can only say that I will be forever grateful to her. And in fact, she and I, while not friends per se, we remain bonded in a way that no two other women are bonded. Almost, it's a very rare bond. You know, we're the only two women on the planet who know exactly what the other person endured being married to the same closeted gay man. And and so I'm profoundly grateful to her for that truth. And I don't know how if a woman has only has her suspicions, her instincts, but no real proof, that gets into murky territory for me.
I'm saying if a woman has proof.
Yeah. If there's
I'm like
proof
you didn't have
out,
proof, but other women.
Yeah.
Right, but if somebody has proof and they know their husband's gay, I mean, it's a fact because they've either caught him or he's admitted it. Should she be telling the next woman?
I mean, I'm going to err. I mean, of course, every situation is individual, but I err on the side of, I do err on the side of yes, because, and even if there's blowback and the second wife is angry or, I personally don't understand the feeling of, well, let her get into the same mud hole that I got into or let her find out the same way that I did, because I never felt any animosity or jealousy towards the second wife. I felt bad for her because I knew what she was walking into. She was walking into crazy town, and I was appalled that I knew what she was going to live. But on one level, I say that, but I have much clearer perspective now, because at the time, please know that I was still coming out of the gaslighting. I mean, even I didn't have a full perspective of what I had lived at the time. But I do err on the side of telling, because as a community of women, or just as a community of decent people who look out for other people, and we can see somebody heading straight for a cliff, like help a fellow human out.
Exactly.
Say, hey,
I agree with you 100%.
You know, there's a cliff up ahead, and you may not believe me, and you may want to keep going on this road, but there's a cliff up ahead, and you may not like me for telling you about it right now, but one day you might appreciate it. And what they do with that information is really their responsibility. If a woman decides to tell, it's really after that is not, you have no, as a first wife, you have no control over that. Or as a second wife, going back to the first wife to tell them, however it is, you really have no control over how that person responds. But you will know that you did what you could to let a fellow human being know that there's a cliff up ahead, and maybe spare somebody the pain and torment that you have endured. So that's my take on sharing information, and knowing the caveat, every situation is completely individual. I mean, some
Absolutely.
People are, you know, not free in their communities to talk openly about their situations.
But it will Absolutely. Really, if you have that opportunity to help a woman out, to validate,
yeah,
you know, what's going on that's wrong in her marriage, like it was in your marriage, I strongly suggest
help
that.
Sister out.
And I always tell women, I'm happy to do it for you. If you don't have to do it, if you call me and say, look, here's a woman in trouble, you know, I'll send her a book. I don't have to tell her where it came from. I just, you know, and I've done this for many women, you know, just to hopefully body off that, you know, there's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Moving on to your article, because your article was just wonderful this month, and so many people wrote back to me saying this was the best newsletter, reading what you've written. So
fantastic.
I asked you to write on this topic because I know that so many of the issues that we face really revolve around the sense of blame, which is also tied in with shame, which is also tied in with guilt. And these emotions just keep, you know, running around like a whirlwind of emotional ridiculousness because we're suffering from something that has nothing to do with us. And you just articulated that so beautifully. So if you would be kind enough to read your article, or if you want to tell us a little bit about it first and then read it, that's fine.
Yeah, I'll say a little bit about it first. You had contacted me, Bonnie, and said, hey, can you write about blame? And I was like, I sure can. So it was kind of a writing assignment moment, and I took to my keyboard and sort of in a fit, I will say there's a bit of an indignant tone on my writing because I, in that moment I just called up and felt so much indignation for how much blame is thrown at straight women who've been married to closeted gay men within our communities, within our marriages, from ourselves, from our families sometimes. And I wanted to really look at blame versus responsibility because, as you said, blame is wrapped up with shame. It's wrapped up with self-loathing. It's wrapped up with fear. And blame is a destructive, it's a destructive emotion. It's a destructive place to be. It's destructive when we get blamed. It's destructive when we blame. And I completely understand the feeling of wanting to blame because I did a lot of blaming of my ex-husband. Needed to do that for a while. Versus responsibility, which is constructive. Responsibility is empowering, but we often confuse those two things. And I wanted to talk about how the path to being able to deflect blame or basically say, I'm not taking that blame, is through personal responsibility. And the article will explain it. So without further ado, I'll just read if that's good for you.
That's great. Please do.
Okay. Here we go. Transmuting blame after the trauma of marriage to a closeted gay man. I want to talk about blame, responsibility, and power. Blame and responsibility are often confused, but they are not the same. One is destructive, the other is constructive. But we run from responsibility when we mistake it for blame. Responsibility is needed to reclaim personal power after a trauma and to reject blame. As straight wives, it is immensely helpful to understand the role each plays in the trauma of discovering our husbands are gay in order to recover and move forward. First, blame. We straight wives know all about blame. When problems crop up in our marriages to closeted or in denial gay men, we are often blamed for those problems by our husbands. Personally, I regularly tried to address the lack of sexual intimacy in my own marriage with my husband. He became deeply uncomfortable and would completely shut down, refusing to communicate at all. He would then become angry and resentful and blame me for confronting him, for putting pressure on him, which made him feel even less like having sex with me than the barely once a month that we were already having sex. His behavior never changed. I never got answers, but I did get blamed for seeking them. We were in a maddening feedback loop of my hurt and frustration at the constant, inexplicable sexual rejection and his anger and blame at being asked to address it. Many of us straight wives were told our bodies were to blame for our husband's lack of attraction to us. We were too fat or too ugly, or our genitals were repulsive or smelled bad. Our bodies were deeply shamed and blamed for a problem that never originated with us. Of course, our husbands weren't attracted to us because they were gay, not because there was anything at all wrong with our beautifully human bodies. But we swallowed that blame, and many of us tried to make ourselves into better, prettier, more desirable versions of ourselves to no avail. Our husbands used blame strategically. As long as they blamed us, they deflected suspicion away from themselves. When we finally learned our husbands were not straight, often it was because we stumbled upon evidence we weren't supposed to find. Whether we went looking for that evidence or were taken by surprise when it surfaced, a few of our husbands came clean then. But those who were still deeply closeted may have flown into blind, panicked rages and blamed us for questioning them, doubting them. They blamed us for our suspicions. They blamed us for needing answers. They blamed us for snooping. They blamed us for finding out their secrets, their shame. And they blamed us for having the audacity to confront them about it. If the evidence was too blatant to deny, they blamed us for shining a light on their dishonesty, their selfishness, their hypocrisy. They blamed us for unmasking them to themselves and to the world. They blamed us for forcing them to confront themselves in the mirror, a responsibility they abdicated in favor of blaming us. They blamed us for tearing our marriages apart for no reason because they weren't gay. They blamed us for splitting up our families when we couldn't tolerate any more lies, any more gaslighting, any more illicit encounters with strange men in motels or clubs or our own beds. When our marriages disintegrated in front of our families and friends, they may have blamed us. They may have blamed us for tarnishing our husbands' or our families' reputations. They may have blamed us for not trying to make it work and keep our families together. Ludicrous as it is, we may even have been blamed for making our husbands gay. And when society at large finds out we were once married to closeted gay men, we are subjected to a litany of humiliating and stigmatizing accusations. We are sneered at and blamed for not knowing our exes were gay. Didn't you know? Weren't there signs? We are blamed for being unsupportive of our gay husbands, who are seen as having overwhelming courage for coming out of the closet, when the incentives for coming out finally outweighed the incentives for staying in. How many of us have heard the accusatory query, "Aren't you glad he can finally be his true self?" When we dared show our justifiable anger at the lies and betrayal, we were blamed for unjustified homophobia. People don't believe us when we insist we are not angry that our husbands turned out to be gay, but because our husbands lied to us about being gay. When we insist our marriages and divorces were crazy-making and profoundly disorienting because of our husband's hidden sexuality, we are asked, "Aren't you relieved he didn't leave you for another woman?" When we were enraged at the years stolen from us, enraged at being used as our husband's closet, enraged at being used as broodmares so they could have children, we are blamed for being bitter, lonely, and pathetic ex-wives. When we feel our lives were commandeered and our marriages were fraudulent, when we feel robbed of an authentic partnership with romantic love and mutual sexual pleasure and intimacy, when we feel violated because we did not consent to being in a mixed orientation marriage, when we question our entire realities, we are blamed for being crazy, for overreacting, for being angry, something a woman is not supposed to be. In short, we are blamed for blaming our husbands. When we dare insist that our lives were not for sale, that our husbands be held responsible for their lives of omission, we are blamed for not giving our closeted husbands a pass for lying because of societal homophobia. How can you blame him for hiding in a marriage when society is so dangerous for gay people? As if we should have happily volunteered to sacrifice our lives. While cultural homophobia is real and insidious, it does not entitle a persecuted human being to use another human being as a human shield. And when, years down the road, we still struggle with depression, anxiety, and PTSD, when we are still in therapy or still struggling to trust men again, we are blamed for not moving on, for not getting over it, for not forgiving our exes soon enough. Yes, we straight wives know all about being blamed. But blame is not the same as responsibility. And in responsibility lies, in my own recovery, I had to work long and hard to parse through the tangled psychological web of my ruined marriage and decide what I was and was not responsible for. In therapy, I realized I was responsible for choosing my ex-husband. He fit into a pattern of abusive men that was part of my own karma, a pattern that existed in my life before I married a gay man, and that continued for a time with heterosexual men after I was divorced. I was also responsible for waking up to that pattern, and I am now responsible for choosing better men in my life. And I was responsible for not knowing myself well enough to realize that my ex, gay or straight, was not a good match for me compatibility-wise. I mistook our common interests, antiques, gardening, and cooking, for compatibility. In truth, I needed to pay attention to what kind of man he was, and if his words matched his behavior, and if who he was, a sheltered, risk-averse homebody, fit with who I was, an adventurous, passionate, wild child. I also had to learn to have compassion for my 21-year-old self who didn't know herself, who couldn't spot his subtle misogyny and abuse, who didn't recognize the sexual red flags, and who didn't know how to honor her instincts about him. I was also responsible for the ways in which I wasn't a good wife. But those lapses were more the product of my youth, immaturity, and superficiality. and they were minor in comparison to the abject abuse, emasculation, and neglect my ex-husband invented and blamed me for. I didn't recognize the person he accused me of being. I knew I was no angel, but I couldn't figure out why he thought I was such a demon by the time we divorced. That is why it was critical for me to decide what I was not responsible for. I was not responsible for my ex-husband's sexuality. I was not responsible for his self-loathing and his internalized homophobia. I never put him in the closet, and I never kept him there, despite his attempts to blame me for it. Actually, when he finally came out to his second wife, he told her that he had tried to tell me he was gay, which is not true, but that my reaction was so rage-filled and abusive that it sent him right back into the closet and into a marriage to yet another unsuspecting woman. Those were his choices. Those were his actions. Those were his lies, and those were the consequences of his decisions, not mine. Not mine. And not ours. As straight wives, it helps to get really clear about what we are and are not responsible for. And therein lies the key to taking back our own power, regardless of whether or not our ex-husbands or families or friends or society continue to blame us for being straight wives, and regardless of whether or not our ex-husbands ever take responsibility for their own choices and lives or for the damage they have done to ours. Responsibility is empowering, even when we do the unpleasant work of taking responsibility for our own less than perfect decisions and actions. When we own and accept those parts of our lives with compassion for ourselves and the imperfect choices we may have made, we can reject blame confidently and powerfully. When we have done our internal psychological work and determined our core truth of what we must own and what we simply cannot own, we have a stable piece of psychological ground to stand on. And from that ground, we can better withstand the blame hurled in our direction from all directions. We can better draw our new healthy boundaries with our exes, our families, and our friends. And we can respond thoughtfully and commandingly in social situations when someone's ignorance and prejudice lead them to misunderstand or misrepresent a straight wife's inner experience. We can own our lives again, and we can own ourselves again. So that was, thank you for hanging with me for that long one, but that was the article.
Oh my God.
That was...
Every little word is like a pearl to me. I mean, nobody articulates this as beautifully as you do. And I just feel that, you know, I've read it so many times. You know, I've probably read this article now 8 to 10 times. And listening to it now, it's just so beautiful. It means so much to me because I'll tell you the truth, Kristen, I see so many of our women suffer for so many years. Mm-hmm. And this is really what started me moving on our Straight Wives Matter campaign to try to get some laws in place. Because just even listening to what you were reading, to think about the unfairness of somebody's life being zapped up under circumstances that they have no clue. And here's one thing. I don't know if you agree with me on this, but I really say this very strongly. I know in the marriages, because I work with women who are not in, you know, straight gay marriages, just straight marriages, you can always say that, you know, it takes two to make a mistake. Two people have two different, go in two different ways. But in these marriages, I really do not hold women responsible at all, and I'm going to tell you why. For all the complaints that I have gay husbands make to me when they come to me to complain about their straight wives, and, you know, they feel they're legitimate complaints, I say to them, I put it back on them, that, yes, maybe your wife is overly suspicious, but doesn't she have reason to be? You're out there cheating on her. Or, yes, your wife is doing this or that, but doesn't she have reason to be? You're not being intimate with her. You're not touching her. It's like you're accusing her of these things that you've created, and you're blaming her for it. And these women who... I remember when I was married, you know, my early days when I had the rejection of sexual rejection, self-rejection, blame, shame, everything you're putting me through, you know, mentioning. I remember going to bed many nights crying, and that's how I would fall asleep, crying, because I just felt so bad about my life that I tried so hard to be a good wife, and no matter what I did, it was never good enough. And it really made me cry, and I used to think, well, maybe my husband will hear my cries and maybe he'll think, why is she hurting so much? But, of course, that never happened because they would blame us for hurting because they feel they're good husbands. And I've had husbands tell me this. I've been a good husband. I didn't leave. I was there to raise my children. I didn't abandon my responsibility. And in their heads, they think that makes them a good husband.
Right.
And I explained to them that just makes you an, you know, husband of obligation. It doesn't make you a good husband. Because it's kind of like, I don't know if you've ever read much of Alice Walker. And, you know, she's a very wonderful author. And, you know, she wrote The Color Purple. And
I know and love her writing well.
She wrote a story that I remember reading called In My Mother's Garden. And it talked about how, you know, she wasn't allowed to be artistic creatively because black women weren't afforded that opportunity back then. So the only way she knew how to express herself was to do gardening and grow flowers, that kind of where she had to channel her creativity because she wasn't allowed to. And I think that with women who are not nurtured and who don't have that kind of praise and people encouragement and feeling good about yourself, you do wither and you do die, and you're not able to do things that you normally could achieve. I know I couldn't. I know that I was stuck in the muck and I couldn't move forward, you know, because every time I tried to move forward, I was dragged back. Did you ever feel like that?
Oh, yes. I felt like I was, I felt like I had, I was dragging a car behind me instead of driving one. I felt like I was, you know, dragging an open parachute at my back. I couldn't figure out why I couldn't make my life go for so many years, because you're still unwinding this huge side. Your body is actually still in a state of trauma because you lived in an environment where the air was made of a lie. So when we talk about blame and responsibility, I want to be really clear. Like, when I take responsibility for the way that I was in my marriage or the way that I chose my husband, those are things that had my husband had been a normal heterosexual guy, we probably would have ended up divorced anyway. But I am in no way responsible for the overarching toxicity of his closeted homosexuality and his self-loathing. And I never, and I will give you an anecdote, a quick one, just to demonstrate this point. My ex-husband, we dated in college, and his roommate was gay. And his roommate was out at school, and he was dating a boy. In fact, we hung out in their dorm room all the time. And my ex-husband had said to me at the time we were dating, he said, hey, you know, my roommate told me he wants to get married and have kids. And I remember saying to him, that's at when I was 19 years old. I don't know when that was, but it was like 23 years ago. but when I was 19 years old, I remember saying to my ex-husband, then boyfriend, that's not okay. Your roommate is not allowed to dupe a woman into marrying her just so he can have kids and a family. And then in my head, and I remember this because I was so incensed by the very notion, the very idea that a gay boy who I was friends with wanted to go and marry some woman so he could have kids and a family and lie to her. I remember thinking in my head, that poor woman, she doesn't even know what's going to hit her. And then it wasn't until a year ago that I remembered that conversation was like, oh my God, I don't think my ex-husband was talking about his roommate. I think he was talking about himself because the roommate was out and dating a boy. And I think the woman who didn't know what was going to hit her was me. So I am in no way to blame or responsible. I deserve zero blame and zero responsibility for his closeted homosexuality, for his internal self-loathing, for his closeted internalized homophobia, which was a chimera in the marriage. It was a neutron bomb that was going to detonate at some point anyway. And I had nothing to do with putting it there. The things that I contributed to the marriage for better and for worse would have been the things in a normal marriage, you know, like I'm selfish in this way or I'm generous in this way, or we've got to work on this part of the marriage, or we're not compatible over here. Like, that would have, might have led to, I think, a normal divorce. I think that might have led to well, we really weren't compatible to begin with. We kind of screwed that up. I guess this was a starter marriage. We'll get divorced. I mean, when I got divorced, you know, I participated in a divorce support group at a local Methodist church, and there were three other women. And I was just like, why aren't these women more devastated and more of a wreck and more shaking? And I can't keep myself together, and I'm a traumatized mess. And what's wrong with me that I – and they seemed relatively fine. And I thought, oh, my gosh, I'm even more broken and damaged because I can't – I didn't know that I had this other kind of divorce that is in a completely different planetary realm, if I can use a metaphor. Like, that is, our divorces are not normal divorces. And I didn't know that I was – I didn't know what I had lived with at the time. I didn't know the toxic, punishing – self-loathing environment that I was living in day to day. I just knew that something was really wrong, and I did blame myself because I thought that my instincts were wrong, and I was being mean to him if I questioned him, and being mean to him if I pressured him about having sex, and being mean to him if I wanted to be a normal wife with normal intimacy, and it does so much destruction and none to our sense of humanity and our sense of self and our sense of reality, not to mention our sexuality, which is fundamental to who we are as human beings. In no way are we, you know, like I said in the article, I didn't put him in the closet and I didn't keep him there. And so I absolutely reject any blame or responsibility for his closet. He brought me into his closet. He kept me in his closet. He did not let me out of it.
But I go even one step further than you do, mm-hmm. because, yes, all of those things are true. But mm-hmm. once again, women still say, even though you know that wasn't your fault or your responsibility, questioning, well, maybe this behavior wasn't the right way to act, or maybe I wasn't, you know, supposed to do this or that. But I say that these marriages totally change who we are.
Yeah.
Our personalities
mm-hmm.
and the way
yeah.
that we react to things based on the way mm-hmm. we're being treated. So if
right.
we are not
yes.
loved, if we're not supported,
yes.
if we get angry, if we get frustrated, if we cry, if we can't
yeah.
be cheerful all the time, it's because we're
right.
living in a state of depression that's brought about by living a lie with somebody who's making us suffer to start with by making
Correct.
Claiming us for everything. And we don't know how to fight this because we don't even know what the truth is.
Right. You cannot
so we're
fight.
Just reacting.
You cannot, yeah, we can't. You mm-hmm. can't. You, the body senses, whether the mind engages it or not, the body senses that it is something is wrong. I used to have
right.
a repeating nightmare when I was married that I was being chased by a shadow man, if you will, who meant me harm. And I would turn in my nightmare. And this, I had this for years while I was married. I would turn and try to punch this man, and I could never, it was like my arm was moving through jello. I could never land a punch on this incredibly threatening man. And the first
mm-hmm.
therapist I ever had said, that man's your husband. And I was like, what are you talking about? I mean, how does this man mean me this much, intentionally mean me this much harm? And I want to be clear, not all gay husbands are as malicious and sadistic. I happen to get one of
mm-hmm.
those. I want to be clear. There are gay husbands out there with decent, integrous intentions and who never
mm-hmm.
mean harm and are not passive aggressive or sadistic or narcissistic. So I'm
right.
not trying to paint with a very broad brush. But many of us have had relationships with these particular types of closeted gay husbands. Yeah, I think I've said before on your show, it is the carbon monoxide of marriages. You can't see it, tell it, you can't see it, taste it, touch it, smell it, but it's killing you all the same. You cannot touch that secret when someone is that intent on being closeted. You cannot get at that truth when they themselves are that intent on hiding. And so we cannot blame ourselves, even if there are red flags, and of course there were red flags in my situation that I look back on now and, you know, beat myself up endlessly for not seeing. And I'm sitting here going, Kristen, this man wanted to stay in the closet. And they can do horrendous things to themselves and to their wives when they're intending to stay in the closet. When someone's very, and they're acting, I'm not a psychologist, I want to be very clear, I'm a writer and an artist, but when someone is acting from that level of fear-based survival, like their entire world is a facade, and the crack in the facade is incredibly threatening. So me divorcing my ex-husband was incredibly threatening to him. So he had to punish me and make sure that I was deeply punished during the marriage so that my self-esteem was so low that I would never leave. And so, I consider it almost miraculous that I had enough of a thread of a sense of self left to get out. And I just have to say that for those women out there, I want to speak directly to your listeners and say that, you keep the fire alive in your belly. Whatever area of life, whether you're 10 years out of divorce or you just found out something horrible on his computer, or you're 2 years out and wondering when it's going to end, or you're still in the marriage because financially it's not possible for you to leave, keep the fire in your belly that's the thread to your own life, because it will serve you. It will pull you through this nightmare, and it will be a foundation for you to build a new life on when you come out on the other side. And I want to say one more thing. Bonnie, I totally agree with you that these marriages change who we are. I mean, I will attest firsthand to mental illness, depression, anxiety, CPTSD that I still have to cope with and deal with and address in my own daily life. And there is no doubt in my mind that being in that kind of a marriage exacerbated those illnesses that I carry as part of my genetic makeup, but that exploded all of it and made it that much more of a force that I have to contend with in my own life and heal from in my own life. And also just in my own life, in my own healing, in my own development, I spent 10 years being single, and I just hired a dating coach because I was like, I say that I want to be back in a relationship, but I'm having trouble putting myself out there, and I'm this great gal, right? And I would love to be in a relationship again, but even after you've worked on healing yourself for all this time, I realized when I was talking to my dating coach, I'll share this with your listeners, I was freaked out. My body was in terror because I was taking a concrete step towards trying to get in relationship again, because I wasn't doing it any on my own. I hadn't set up any dating. I mean, it was like I would always find an excuse not to move towards dating, right? I would always, I've got to clean the shower, instead of put together a dating profile. Finally, I had to say to myself, are you serious about a relationship or aren't you? And if you are, I mean, it's possible that I'll be single for the rest of my life, but it's not going to be because I didn't try. So if you're serious about a relationship, Kristen, and that was all, for 10 years, what that was, Bonnie, was the protection that I had built around myself, that I came out of that marriage saying that I'm never doing this again. And I went into a space where, thankfully, it's not that I didn't date. It's not that I didn't have sex with men. It's not, but I never went into a long-term relationship. I always dated very nice, wonderful men, but it was always for a very short-term period. And none of them were long-term relationship material for me. So actually, in a weird way, that kept me safe. So the real vulnerability for me is opening up my heart again to a true relationship. And I'll be honest with your listeners, I struggle with that right now. And because even now, 10 years and after thousands of dollars that I've paid out of my own pocket for therapy, there's still that fear, like, oh God, what if he's hiding something from me? What if he's not telling me the truth about who he is? And that would not be in my system like it is if it hadn't been for that marriage. There's just no doubt in my mind that I wouldn't be carrying that trauma still. And something I told my dating coach, like, hey, this is even taking the step of hiring you is a testament to how much of a protection I've built around my own heart and my own life and my own self for the past 10 years. And dismantling that castle that I've built around myself is really hard because it's been really safe and cozy in here. And I never would have put that up there if it hadn't been for the marriage and divorce that I had. So you're absolutely right. These marriages do change us on a fundamental level. And my big thing is always, I wasn't going to make it be for nothing. Like, I don't believe people, I'm not a fan of the whole it happens for a reason. I think that's BS, and I kind of want to throat punch people who say it all happens for a reason. No, it doesn't. There's like, that
right,
did not
exactly.
have to happen. But I will say that my thing was that since that did happen to me, I'm not going to make it be for nothing. And so that's, I think, and I don't know, maybe you feel this way, but things like doing your show and writing enabled me to pay it forward and to and talk to other women and men too, and be able to say, like, you're not crazy, you're not to blame, and it is not your fault. And that is very different than what you may or may not be personally responsible for. You are responsible for picking up your life from this point forward. You are responsible, and you get the opportunity to heal yourself, which can be profound. I mean, I've had some experiences in the last 10 years that because they were such tremendously healing experiences, they've changed my life and set me on a trajectory that I don't even know where it's going to take me yet, but that trajectory, but I take responsibility for that. Like, the great, amazing healing things that I've done in my life, those were my choices. He doesn't get any credit for that. And I think that some people, the people who say, like, well, yeah, because that crappy thing happened to you, look where you are now. I'm like, no, I'm where I am now because I took that crappy thing that happened to me and said, I'm not doing that again. I'm going to make some choices to make sure that never happens again, and I'm going to have some amazing experiences in my own life to heal myself. So I take all the credit for.
And you know what? You deserve all the credit, Chris, because you've done such a beautiful job of really opening up people's hearts. And I do want to tell you, it took me 11 years until I was able to, you know, open my heart again, to, you know, let my soulmate come in there because of all these kinds of insecurities and the, all the emotional, you know, horrible things that was going on inside of me. And the hardest thing for me was, once I did get back into a relationship that had been taken from me, was the issue of trust. Because that will be something you're going to have to deal with once you meet someone, because we've been so, you know, conditioned to believe things that aren't true, that just trusting again. But there's somebody wonderful out there, I know, who's looking for you. So it's just a matter.
Thank you for saying that.
You may have to look a little bit, but there's some wonderful man out there who's going to be your soulmate. And I can't wait till that happens, because you will be a wonderful partner to any man. Any man who's smart enough to accept that you're smarter than he is, I'm sure. You're like the smartest woman who comes up with all these million things. It's going to take a big, strong man to take that. But, you know, like I say, it will happen for you. And I have no doubt, to stay out of show business when you're meeting someone. That's some good advice that I've heard.
I've learned that lesson. Thank
you so
much.
If you're looking
for
a straight husband. But thank you so much for being here. And I really, I can't believe how fast this hour went.
I know.
I do hope that, you know, you'll consider coming back on the show again in a few months. Because it's always so uplifting to hear your words, and this is never enough time, but I do wish you good luck. And where are you now? You're in Naples now?
I'm based out of Naples, Florida right now. I'll actually tell you, I'm free floating, and I'm staying in my parents' winter house because I'm not sure where I want to move next. So I'm being a little bit of a nomad here. So, you know, it's all a part of the unfolding of the mystery that is my life at the moment, and I'm just rolling with it.
And I think that's wonderful. I really admire your courage to do that. So to all of
thank
our
you.
Listeners, I thank Kristen so much. Like I say, she is definitely my literary hero. I love just listening to you, Kristen. I hope you get your own show one day so I can sit and listen to you every week. That would be really, really
that'd
wonderful.
That'd be great.
That's right, Kristen.
Thank you so
We'll
much.
Be talking about that soon, too. All right, to all of our listeners, thank you for tuning in. Kristen will be back with us. I will chase her down wherever she is. I'll find you, Kristen, and hopefully have you back after the holidays.
Oh, that'd be
all
great.
Right, thank you so much.
Have a wonderful holiday. Thanks, Bonnie.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye.